Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm Don Nikoloff, and it is the 2nd of April. Still on the West Coast, it's April Fools. And I'm sure many of you had a chance to play a practical joke on someone. I think we'll refrain from that on tonight's show and get down to some serious business. Of course, there's quite a bit in the news, and so much that we're not even going to waste any time tonight talking about it. And we're going to get right to spiritual matters. Tonight's guest was on Evident Footprints a couple of weeks ago, and I had many requests to have her back on. And she got many requests from me to come back on, and she's with us tonight. She is an author, a doctorate. A doctor of metaphysics, and she has written a book called The Call, which you can see on my website, directlightproductions.com, on the books page. In fact, hers is the first book listed on that page, and The Call is a primer in the study of the angelic human, and discusses how you can reach a higher state of consciousness, among other things. And I encourage you to read that book. I've been reading it, have read most of it, and it's very revealing, very heartening, and encouraging when you consider what's going on in the world today. It's definitely food for the soul. And with that, I would like to bring on again, with a nice hearty welcome, Toni Elizabeth Sarah-Petrinovich, Ph.D. Toni, how are you this evening?
I'm wonderful, Don. Thank you very much for having me back. This is lovely.
Well, it'll happen again, I'm sure. So,
good.
Thank you for coming back.
You're welcome. And it's still April Fool's Day here, and we had a wonderful April Fool's trick played on us. All of our whole island is about 1,500 people here on Lopez Island, and we actually got to talk with the woman who did it tonight. This lady from the school here created the Loch Ness Monster for our lake. We have a big lake called Hummel Lake that people fish on and row, and they go boating and what have you, and it's in the middle of the island, and she created a life-size Loch Ness Monster out of some kind of material and black garbage bags, and put it in put it in the middle of the lake. So this morning when everybody woke up and there was still mist, you know, on the water, here's the Loch Ness Monster.
Now, and you say life-size. Did she compare that to the one in...
Well, life size, you know, for what we imagine it to be, you know, it's huge.
Okay.
And so we didn't know about it until tonight, but it was still light out. So we went down and looked at it, and it's just great. And somebody had rowed out to the middle of the lake and put a stocking cap on it.
It was
so funny. And so she was there, and we got a chance to talk to her about her little production. Mm. But it was wonderful. It was great. And some people got some really good pictures of it. So if she's going to send them to me, I'll be able to put them on my webpage.
Oh, yeah. Please send me a picture. I'll put it on my site.
I will. She said that one of the bus drivers got a picture, some pictures, just as the mist was really settling and the sun was rising. And one of the school bus drivers that are out early got a picture of the sunlight coming through the mist, turning it all gold, and all you see is that and the Loch Ness Monster. There's nothing else. Yeah, so it'll be really good. It'll be lovely. That was much fun.
And everybody's wondering, what's the bus driver doing with a camera, right?
Well, the thing was, it turned out that she didn't have a camera with her. One of the students did.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, as the story goes. So what's the student doing with a camera going to school? I don't know.
Yes.
Unless it's one of those cell phone cameras, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. We'll find out.
Well, if you get some pictures, send them to me and we'll post them.
Oh, I will. Definitely will do that. Yeah,
and any information about the photographer or whatever, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. That would be super.
Well, the last time you were on the show, we discussed your background and how you got into metaphysics and your your religious training and your interest in horseback riding and all of that.
And all of those things.
And you and I made a verbal contract that when you get another horse that I will be the babysitter when you have to go on tour.
Yes, this is true.
Okay.
So I remember.
That pretty much encapsulates the whole show, folks. So
if you missed it, that's what we talked about.
Yes, but we did talk about a little bit. We touched on the concept of angels and the concept of the angelic human. And I did get the $64,000 question right. I remember that. and we'll probably revisit that topic for a moment. But we also began speaking about orbs, and we ran out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you had quite a bit to share, as well as some new ideas that we hadn't even thought of during the last show.
Yes, the light orbs are getting a lot of attention right now in some circles. Some people I know haven't even heard of them. If you go on the internet and you just plug in light orbs, you'll get more websites than you want to even look at to be able to investigate. They came into our awareness most popularly. I know people have been seeing them for a long time, long, long time. Some people have told me like 40 years they've been seeing them. But as far as the general population is concerned, somewhere around 2000. I ran into them somewhere around 1997, 1998. By being on the internet looking for something, and as everyone knows who surfs on the internet, you start at one place and you end up somewhere else and you don't even remember how you got there. And I ended up on a website where there was a young man talking about having seen these light orbs coming through what he was calling a rift in time and space, like as though there were, it was a hole. That's how it was appearing to him in any event. And that once they were in his line of vision and in his consciousness, they told him that they would appear for him any time that he called them or that he wanted them to be there. So I thought, well, that's interesting. If they're conscious and if they can do that for him, I'm sure they can do that for me too, because we're all one, so I can summon them and we'll just see what happens. So I did, and sure enough, they came, and they didn't come to me visually first. They came within my mind, and they began talking to me and telling me things basically about the universe and different things that would, I guess you'd probably term them quantum physics, that I'm interested in, but that I didn't know. So I knew I didn't know it, and I knew that the words weren't words I was familiar with, so I knew that wasn't me, and it had to be coming from someplace else. And had this wonderful kind of download of information for about an hour. And then I was through with my meditation, and I said, well, thank you so much. You can go now. And they said, oh, no, no. Once we have come to be with you, then we stay with you. So we're not really going to be leaving. So I thought, well, all right, that's fine. I got some buddies, I guess. So time went on, and not a lot happened. I talked with them. They talked with me. It wasn't anything. There was a great shakes. And then one day they appeared in my house. And very large and very obvious and couldn't possibly be any other light source. It had to be the orbs. And then I realized just how real they were. Short time after that, I went to Lepush, which is an Indian reservation over on the Olympic Peninsula in the Pacific Ocean, which is a great place I love to go for retreats. And they appeared there just so prolifically. They were everywhere. And I asked them why they were there in such abundance, and they said, because they were trying to get my attention. I said, you've got it. What do you want? And they said, well, we would like you to transmit information for us. We will give you information to tell people who want the information, and you will tell them. Will you do that? And I said, sure, but I need to know who you are. I don't know what you are. I mean, I know you're light orbs, but it doesn't tell me anything. And they said, we are the guardians of your soul. So I thought, well, okay, that's lovely. And I didn't really go into it any further with them than that. And so I posted this on my website that I would do this, and I had been doing soul readings for people, and I said it's like a reading, except it's not me reading your soul, it's the light orbs giving you information, but it's basically the same modality.
Mm-hmm.
So people started coming and, you know, having different, you know, transmissions and readings done, and it was wonderful, because the people who came first were people that I knew really well, and I thought, wow, okay, so let's see what happens, because I think, quote unquote, that I know these people. Let's see what the light orbs have to say. Well, they gave me information that was totally different than anything that I ever thought about having to do with these people, and they were right on. So that the people would feed back to me, oh my gosh, you're right. That is something I've always wanted, or is something I know, or it is something I want to do. But it wasn't anything that I knew about them. So in the midst of all of this, I got an email from a lady in Canada who said to me, I just found the Light Orb page on your webpage, and I wanted to say thank you. You have brought me peace. And that was all she said. So I emailed her back, and I asked her what she meant. And it turned out that she had two children. One was a younger boy, and one was an older boy. I had like two families as far as children were concerned. And the older boy had left home, and she was raising the younger one. He was very young. He was just like a toddler. And the older boy came home, and he told her he was coming home to die. And he was only there for like 5 days before he died. And in that time, the young child, the little one, who was always very irascible and kind of just a cranky baby, was calm, was happy, was always sleeping, was just being this perfect little child when his bigger brother was there. And so the day before he died, he told his mother that he had to go because it was time to become a guardian of the soul. And then the next day he died. And then she sent me these pictures with this story, and she said, look at these pictures of my younger son. This had never happened until my older son died, and all of the pictures of the younger son have this huge orb surrounding him. So it was my take, and it is her take, that her older son is now guarding this young child. So without putting any judgments on it, I thought to myself, all right, so I thought that the orbs were basically conscious beings that are their own consciousness, that are doing whatever they're doing and giving information through us. And this young man is telling me that he has become this form and he's going to guard his brother. So I have a feeling that the light orbs are there's a lot more to them than we fathom, that we know, and that a lot of the information that is out there right now saying, well, the light orbs are this and the light orbs are that, are leaving out a lot of pieces that we haven't looked at yet because we just don't have access to the information.
Do you mind if I ask you a question?
No, go ahead.
Okay, I just did, but I'll ask another one.
Okay. That's true, you did.
I'm being a smart aleck again.
I know that's you, Don. That's okay.
I'll try to tone it down a bit, folks.
You wouldn't want to be out of character.
I was raised into a Christian faith of the Eastern Orthodox variety, and they have many religious paintings that end up being in the churches. And the saints all have an orb of light around their head.
It's a halo.
Yes, it's a halo of sorts, but it more looks like, not the stereotypical version of a halo, but more like an orb behind the head.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if you think that was the guardian of the soul there, or that that's the metaphysical representation, like you just said, of the halo, or the interpretation of the artist that all of these saints would have these orbs around them, possibly that they had been seen by the painter.
Well, if this had been yesterday that we were talking, I would have said to you, I think it is a rendering of what the artist thinks of as the light shining from this being.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not yesterday, it's today. And
yes.
As you asked me that question, I knew what you were going to say before you said it.
Well,
and
I shouldn't have even asked it then, should I?
Well, you should have said, I'm going to ask you the question you know I'm going to ask you.
Yes.
No, but the thing that happened, you see, is that I really pay attention to synchronicities, and I pay attention to how things weave together and how things happen. It's like this has been my penchant in my whole life, is watching the weaving of everything.
Yes.
And I did a light orb transmission for a woman I've known for probably 18 years. I did it last week. I mailed it to her. She lives in Poulsbo, which is outside of Seattle. And today she got on the phone with me and we talked about it. She is an artist, and she asked me that exact same question. I've never been asked that question before in all the years I've been doing light orb readings. No one's ever asked me that question, and now you just asked it again. And
well,
so now what I'm getting is there's more to it than we know.
Yes.
Definitely.
I suspect that, what I alluded to is probably the case. Do
uh-huh.
I have proof of it? No. Well, but my intuition tells me that that's what it is.
Well, the thing that hits me is that you picked that up. She picked that up. I hadn't really thought about it. And it's just, quote unquote, too coincidental that it's happening in exactly
yes.
the same day. I mean, if that's how if we pay attention, that's how we learn things.
Mm-hmm.
They come to us until we get it. And yes, okay, I get it. That's very interesting. I'm really going to have to look into this some more, because I was raised in the Catholic Church, so we were surrounded by statues and pictures with halos all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the.
Now I've had a couple of really heavy metaphysical experiences in my life, which were definitely windows or doors to higher consciousness being opened for me, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that I played a role in it, but I was more an observer of the whole event than a participant than the creator of the event.
Mm-hmm.
And from that came a knowledge of auric reading and perceiving illness in the aura, and being able to diagnose an illness or sense, discern what a person's particular health issue might be. And I
mm-hmm.
can also do this without even seeing the aura. In
mm-hmm.
other words,
mm-hmm.
I see it in spirit.
Right.
Now, one of my recent guests, and I want to share this with you because I'd like you to put this in the context of orbs. One
okay.
of my recent guests, Deanne Hampton, who is, let's say, a sound vibration healer
yes.
and works with DNA activation,
yes.
much like you do.
Uh-huh.
And this woman lives in love, pure love. She just sees joy in everything around her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually editing her next book.
Okay.
And so we've been talking about the material and how we're going to present it, and then we got into talking about orbs and light and sound and all of this, and she said, I'm going to send you some light during the day. You tell me at the end of the day if you see anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was in the middle of a news broadcast
with
a guest, and I was reading a document when she sent the light to me.
Right.
And it clouded my vision. It was so intense.
How lovely.
And then I spoke to her later that evening, and she asked me if I remembered seeing any light. And I said, well, no, I don't. But what I then recalled was, wait a minute, I was doing mm-hmm. a broadcast on BBS Radio, and you sent me light, didn't you? And she laughed, and she said, what color was it? And I described the colors.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, I knew she had actually sent a heart. And it was really messing with my eyes, because
mm-hmm.
the curves at the top of the heart were basically going from the bridge of my nose, over my eyebrows, and around my eyes. And everything had these colors. I could barely see the printing on the document that I was reading. Now, I pulled a fast one on her yesterday and sent her some red light.
Great.
She had a physical injury, and I was intuiting I should send blue light, and the message came through, no, it's too late. Send red light.
Okay.
So I sent her red light, and I got an email. I've been seeing red light all day. What's going on?
Oh, I love it. Oh, it's wonderful.
So this is something that we can do. Now, I've already asked you the question, but this is for the sake of the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Is that us sending light orb energy, or are we just sending maybe a different manifestation?
Well, it's a different manifestation. It is actually, you know, when we say we're sending energy,
mm-hmm.
and I know that we think that we are because you're there and I'm here in this world kind of thing, in reality, our intention is creating
mm-hmm.
in non-locality, the same space, same time, exactly what your intention is for her. It's as though the two of you are overlapped in a wave stream.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we see it as distance, and there is no distance. So your intention creates it in the same time and space that she is, and you are exactly in the same moment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yes.
And that's different than the orbs, from what I understand. They are conscious beings, like we're conscious beings. The bodies that we see, they manifest in these round, fluorescing lights, are their quote-unquote bodies that we can see. And yet at the same time, they're really nothing but light that we can't see, just like really we're nothing but light that we can't see with these eyes. And they have a body that is round, and what they tell me is that the reason they chose a round form was because nothing can stick to it. Nothing, like if there was projections, there could be energetic catches, so to speak. Nothing can stick to them at all. They're simply round, and they've told several people in transmissions that I've done, and that's actually how it came up, was they would like to coach us in being round ourselves so that energy doesn't stick to us. We don't get caught up in the day-to-day, the distractions, the things that the ego personality thinks are so important.
Did you inform them that couch potatoes, in general, are doing a pretty good job at becoming round?
I'm sure, I haven't, but I'm sure they would laugh. They're very humorous. That's one of the things that's so much fun about them, is that they see things with humor and they make these jokes. And when I was talking to my friend today that I had done the reading for, and we were talking about what, you know, the words in her reading, and I said, she said, I love the jokes. And I said, well, you know, quite frankly, some of them are so corny, they're so trite, that I feel myself blushing as the words are coming out of my mouth, because my mind in the background is going, oh my gosh, that just sounds so corny. And they think it's hysterical. They ha ha ha, and they giggle and laugh and make all these little kind of slight comments, and it's
mm-hmm.
it's funny. And I like it from the standpoint that it keeps life from being so serious.
Yes.
Because
do they consider themselves, or do you consider them part of the angelic realm, in that they're guardians and that they're light beings? And
not in the same way that people think of the angelic realm.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't think of themselves. They call themselves, and they said what they would prefer to be seen as are emanations from the eminence.
Okay.
And they say that we are that too, except that we don't act that way or think about it. And they said they are consciously aware of the fact that they are emanations from the eminence being the ineffable source, that name for God that you can't say, because once you say it, then you've manifested something and you've created it. It's the ineffable, that's what you can't speak, if you understand what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So they see themselves as emanations from that.
Okay.
And that's how they personify themselves when I talk with them about that. So it's not the same as the angelic realm. Now, as we were talking a little bit about last time, the angelic realm has been shown in pictures, you know, similar with the halo and the flying wings and the big fluffy dress, and always a lovely flowing hair. And this is just lovely pictures because the angelic realm is really a disembodied realm, and the word angel means messenger. So angels are messengers. So when I'm talking about the angelic human, I'm talking about humans who have a message. And we all have a message. We all came here with some message. And it doesn't make any difference whether it's a big message or a little message or however people have an opinion about their message. The message is still there, embodied and encoded within their DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in awakening that message that we're able to feel fulfilled on this planet.
And I wonder... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying fulfillment takes lots of forms. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean that you are, quote-unquote, the American way, rich, successful, blah, blah, blah. Fulfillment is absolutely relative to each person.
Well, you described their appearance, and they sort of described themselves as round. I think you described them as like a ball of light. I wonder
right.
if we get this phrase that we use sometimes when we say, well, I had a ball last night. I wonder I wonder if that's really a subconscious manifestation of that knowledge. In other words,
that's possible. That's possible. Absolutely, because they certainly are about joy.
Yes.
And that is where, when we have fulfilled that which we have come to this world to fulfill, no matter what it is, no matter how little it is or how big it is, we know it. And we are in joy. And then it doesn't make any difference what's happening around us. Like you were talking about this lady whose book you're editing and how she's always in love and she sees love and joy in everything and everybody. Then she is at a place where she knows that she's fulfilling what she came here to do.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
when you are doing that, that's all you see. You don't see anything else. There isn't any reason to. Everything else is based on judgments and opinions, expectations, conditioning, belief systems, none of which are real.
Yes, I agree.
So When we want to awaken the angelic human, when we want to, you know, hear what the orbs have to say so that we can learn more about what we're here for or what we're doing, that's what we're reaching for. Is that sense of fulfillment so that all we see is love.
Now, there's an aspect, Tony, related to the elementals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you're familiar with the elementals.
Yes.
And I think there's a fine line between their role and the role of these orbs or these light beings that you're describing. The reason I bring this up is that there are two ways to communicate with elementals, and for those who are unfamiliar with the term, basically it's the spiritual essence in the things inside the earth, in metals, in even plant material, minerals, the substances that make up the core of the earth. We're not necessarily the center core of the earth, but what we would call second dimensional space in our reality. And when we take certain elements out of the earth, what we're doing is removing the elementals from their home, basically. And so they can then attach themselves to people or things, and really it's a disruption to their natural state is what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
Do they speak about the elementals at all? And from their perspective, I have the impression that they are of a higher order of consciousness, let's say, than elementals. Yet elementals know what they are to do, and they don't stray from that.
Mm-hmm. Right. They haven't really brought it up. I haven't brought it up to them either, and neither has anybody else that I know of. They're not the same thing. Like you said, they're a higher order of consciousness, and they're a consciousness unto themselves, whereas the elementals are really attached to the element that they are, like you said, removed from the earth. That if it's a rock, it's the elemental within the rock that is part of that rock, whereas the orbs aren't really part of their round body. This is just a manifestation so that we can see them.
Mm-hmm.
It is, it's a creation. So,
yeah, I guess I'm speaking more in terms of function. In other words, you know, the spiritual consciousness of what we would normally consider inanimate objects, which are very much alive.
Right.
And they serve a purpose. One would ask, why is it, or what is it about the physical world that we don't understand in terms of consciousness, and what how we can be disruptive to it? And what am I asking? basically, I'm comparing, I guess, two different types of consciousness, but both seem to work along the same principles.
Yes, it does, except that the light orbs aren't attached to the earth in the same physical way that the elements and the elementals are.
Yes.
And you're right. The consciousness of mankind, and this doesn't go for all of mankind, because there are a lot of beings and people who exist right now who do have respect for the elements and the plants and the animals and the rocks and things of that nature. But as a species, overall, I would say that mankind is very disrespectful of that which is, in his viewpoint, subjugated for his use, and does not think about anything from the standpoint of having its own consciousness, like in a rock or in a plant life, even with the work that's been done with a lot of the plants to show how conscious they are of everything that we do with them. Very few people are even, you know, paying attention to that. And I feel strongly that, for at least for this particular generation and the last few generations before this one, it's had a lot to do with science. And I'm a great one who loves to delve into science, so I'm not knocking science. I'm simply saying that that's where we have been. Sir Francis Bacon was a misogynist, and he absolutely hated women. He hated a lot of the nurturing aspect of anything. And so he was the one who came up with the scientific mission, which we still are living under, of binding nature and torturing her secrets out of her. And that's a quote. And that's what science has, that's been the mission statement that's been hovering over science all of these years, that that's what we're to do, is to take the natural world and we're to bind it up and control it and get it to tell us how it works so that we are in charge of it. And you can see it in everything that we do. When it comes to, you know, with pharmacy, the science, the medical industry, just the whole bailiwick is bent on making sure that we're in control of what happens. So until very recently, most of the medicine that we have practiced in the United States and Europe too has been more like, you know, this part's broken, take it out, put it back in, a new part back in, just like a watch, like you'd be repairing a watch. And there have been a lot of changes. There's been a lot of newer consciousness that's been coming up within the medical profession, which is wonderful. And all of it was superseded by the women being healers centuries ago and basically terrifying the Catholic Church beyond words. So we had the witch hunts and all of the other stuff that everybody, you know, knows about to some degree, and until it was subjugated to a point that it was buried, and everyone was afraid to practice anything that even came close to that.
Well, I know the medical community probably isn't using leeches, by and large, around the planet like they used to bleed people. But I think the banking community still has them.
And Demi Moore.
Yes.
Demi Moore, she just came out and said that she's using leeches.
Oh, my goodness.
To purify her blood. This is an aside, in case you didn't know that.
I wasn't aware of that. you learn something every day.
It was on the news.
Oh, my goodness.
Exciting.
Okay. Well, Now there was another issue that I know you want to discuss, and we had touched upon Zechariah Sitchin's work.
Yes.
And the Anunnaki. And you know that we have this mystery of Planet X, they're calling it. And I find that interesting because X is the symbol for Satan. And I know my gut tells me that there's something about this that isn't real. Now, there are many, many heavenly bodies, we know. Mm-hmm. And I'm speaking about out in space, not on the planet. And Sitchin's work definitely is a serious, in-depth study that no one else did on the Anunnaki and Nibiru and the whole concept of giants being here on this planet and manipulating our DNA and having a big impact on, in a secret way, on our society, even today.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to share about, you know, your viewpoints on that?
Well, I think that Zechariah's work is absolutely awesome. I know there are a few naysayers out there that say, well, he was off by 1,000 years over here. Well, when you're talking about hundreds of thousands of years, I'm not really too concerned about 1,000. His credentials that he likes to talk about, I've listened to him speak several times, and he likes to talk about when he was in Hebrew school as a child and what got him started on his path. And it was being taught by the instructor certain passages within the Old Testament and realizing that they were being mistranslated because he was very smart. He was one of those little kids that the teacher just wishes wasn't in the class. And he would ask questions, and he'd say, well, you just said that the Tower of Babel translates into, you know, like a tall tower. And what it really means, what those words really mean is, heaven to earth go. It doesn't mean tower. It means like more like a launching pad rather than a tower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he would pick things apart, and the teacher would get very, very mad at him and tell him that he wasn't ever to question her. So as he grew up, he realized that he really wanted to translate the Sumerian tablets from the ground up. And so he has spent his whole life, and he's in his 80s now, he's spent his whole life doing this, and his work is awesome. And basically what the bottom line is that what the Sumerian tablets tell us is that some beings came to this planet roughly 450,000 years ago who were called the Anunnaki, and they had come here to look for gold. Zechariah believes that it was to put gold dust in their atmosphere because their atmosphere was breaking down. I believe that's a summation on his part. I'm not sure that is what is said within the tablets themselves. And he'll always tell you if he's come to his own conclusions rather than what is being actually translated. In any event, they came here looking for gold. There's a whole other subject of monatomic gold and white powder that leads into this, if anybody listening knows about that, but we're going to put that on the side table for a minute. And when they started mining for gold, they realized how hard it was and decided that they needed some workers, and they were going to create workers. Well, first of all, we stop and think, okay, they were going to create workers. They knew how to do something like cloning or something. We don't know. But anyway, one of them said, we do not need to make anything. There is already something here. All we need to do is place our mark upon it. And what he was talking about was roughly around the time of the Neanderthal man, as far as we can tell. And Ninhursag, who was the half-sister of the two brothers who had come down here, and Leo and Enki, was their chief medical officer, and so she said, well, I can do this. And she fussed around and manipulated with the DNA for a long time and came up with various species that weren't too helpful, and finally blended the Anunnaki genes with the supposed Neanderthal, we'll just say whatever species of man was alive at that time, and created what they called the Lulu, the worker, which was a hybrid that could take direction, was intelligent enough to do what it was told, and could not breed. And when they did this, now, mind you, we're talking about beings who are, first of all, working with our DNA, which is evolving and becoming more and more and more advanced, and DNA coming from a species that is advanced enough to know how to do it, to get here from another planet, and to know that they could create what they needed here if they needed a worker. And when they did that, they only turned on the DNA that they wanted us to have, or humans to have, however you want to verbalize that, to do what they needed to have done, which was work, and say yes and do as you're told. So this goes on for a while, and finally Enki, who was one of the brothers, decided that this was way, way, way too hard. His sister was working too hard, having to do all of this in vitro breeding of these beings was taking too long. So he talked his sister into manipulating the DNA again and allowing them to reproduce. And that's when all hell broke loose, because all of a sudden they were out there and they were just going like rabbits and mating right and left, and there were more and more and more and more beings being created. And his brother Enlil, who was running the show, didn't like it, said, we know that there's going to be a cataclysm coming, because Nibiru is coming around again. It comes around every 3,600 years. And when it does, there's going to be a tidal force on this planet, and there's going to be an ice sheet that's going to break off, which they could see because they were up there in their little spaceships. Let's let it happen. Let's not say anything. Let's let everybody get washed away, and we're going to start over again. Everybody agreed except Enki. This is where the story of Noah comes in. So we go on and on and on, and I could go on for a long time about this, which I'm not going to do right now. But what my point is that what happened with our DNA is not that it got turned off. It simply never got turned on. It's dormant. And this is exactly what our scientists are saying about the junk DNA, which is 97% of the DNA in our body. They call it junk DNA because they don't know what it does. They say it doesn't code for anything. It's just there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not just there. It has a potential for all of the things that we yearn for, long for. It's encoded in our bodies, and that's why we wish so much to feel home, to know, like you were talking about sending the energy and the light to this woman and back and forth, to know all of these pieces. You and I, and probably a lot of the listeners, talk about these things because they're in our world and we're really familiar with them, and it's not something that is far outside of our perception. But if you took that same sentence out on the street and just started talking to somebody about it, they really would not know what you were talking about.
Oh, yes, I understand that. But the listeners on BBSradio.com do understand.
They do understand, right. So we are a privileged few that realize that we can actually do this.
Yes.
So when we take the idea of beings going through all of the evolution from the point that I just was describing on up, and if you just, you know, read Zach's work or even look at anybody else that is extrapolated from him, you all of a sudden you begin to find the missing link. And the fact that in 3000 BC we went from basically building fire and learning how to feed ourselves to within 1,000 years having civilization, astronomy, the wheel, fine jewelry, the Age of Bronze. All of this came about at that time when the Anunnaki finally said, we cannot just do this way. What we need to do is to create priest kings that are going to be between us and all of these people. Because, of course, once Noah's group began reproducing, then we had more people again. So we have these priest kings that are in between the Anunnaki and the human beings, who are actually the rulers, and everyone saw the Anunnaki as gods because they lived so long. They weren't really immortal, but they appeared that way to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these priest kings who say only we can talk to God. We have to talk to God for you. We get the beginning of religion. All of these things happened within such a short period of time when it took all these hundreds of thousands of years for mankind supposedly to evolve to that point. So when you start putting all these pieces together, you begin to see where all of it weaves into one picture, and then you can realize that what we really want to do is awaken the DNA within us so that we know who we are, our message, and what we are. And that's what I'm calling the angelic human. It's each human with his or her message that she is on this earth to experience, to live, and to give. And we can trace it all the way back to, you know, beings coming here in the midst of our evolutionary process to create an opportunity for ourselves to know that what we have been fed has been a misinterpretation of a lot of written down documents that have been translated and slanted in such a way that it gives certain organizations, churches and governments, control of the people, the priest kings, controlling the people.
Yes.
And that's what it's all about. I mean, you can trace it all the way back. You know,
some of what I've studied, and I can't remember if I read this in Sitchin's work or maybe something like the Book of Urantia, but the same references to time, 450,000 years, basically, that is correlated in both works. And I say both, meaning Sitchin's work or the Urantia book.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the pharaohs, the pharaohs of Egypt, were given monatomic gold to give them a slightly higher ability to reason and solve problems and maybe have a slightly higher consciousness in connection with their mental faculties.
Right.
And I wanted to bring this up because I feel it's important. It definitely has everything to do with what's going on today, and basically for almost the past 100 years on a political scale worldwide.
Yeah.
And that is and I don't recall if I read this in Sitchin or, again, I'm repeating myself, the Urantia book, but it had to do with the fact that Abraham had been given the charge of uranium, or Ur, as it was called. And possibly that they had brought that here and left it here so that when they needed it and they were in this vicinity, they could basically pick it up. Now, he had hidden it, which is why it's scattered all over the planet the way it is, but it's not predominant all over the planet. There are certain areas where we find large deposits of uranium. I found that to be quite interesting because that has become a political tool.
Right, exactly. And it was the monatomic gold and the menstrual blood of the Anunnaki women that was given to the priest kings to change their DNA enough that they would live longer, be healthier, understand more, and be able to stand in the space of being intermediary between the people and the Anunnaki. And that's where we get communion, is the blood
yes, yes.
and the bread. Okay, so if you go into various books of the Old Testament and you start reading, and you read with an eye for what you're looking for, so you're not just reading like you're reading the Old Testament, and they start talking about bread, very often they're not really referring to bread. They're referring to the white powder. And if you go back and you follow the translations of the words, that's what you find. But again, it was translated in such a way as to serve the person who was doing the translation or his particular faith.
They also called that bread manna, if I
remember. Manna, exactly. Yeah. The manna from quote-unquote heaven that came down in the desert when Moses was leading the Israelites out of Egypt, exactly. And
so,
the word manna itself actually means what is it? And the Egyptian Book of the Dead is filled with the what is it that was given to the person who was dying, and this was symbolic, so that they could find their way through the river Styx to the heavenly realms. So what they were saying is, the what is it, the mana, which is not an Egyptian word, but the white powder, is what it transforms you into a god. And the qualities of it, and anybody who wants to look it up, you can just plug in monatomic gold into the computer and you'll find all kinds of information on it. And most of it's pretty good. David Hudson is the guy you really want to read. What it does is it changes the molecular structure within the body to attune the physical body to the light body and awakens the clairsentient powers, however they're going to awaken within each person.
Yes. Now, in other words, it precipitates what might occur naturally just by hanging out
right.
and waiting for it to happen naturally.
Right. Exactly.
Like what we're experiencing on this planet right now, in fact,
mm-hmm.
and will
yes.
be for some years to come.
Right. Exactly.
Now, we want to clarify that this is not mana like in mononucleosis or...
No. No, it's like in monatomic.
Yes.
What it actually is... I was trying to find a really easy way to explain this the other night. My partner Philip and I were talking about monatomic gold, and we're taking it apart physically and looking at the physics of it and trying to get this definition because it's kind of complex. But bottom line is, the reason it's called monatomic is you've actually got two atoms, and they're sharing electrons in such a way that they end up being one atom. That's it in a nutshell. You can look it up and read paragraphs and paragraphs and diagram it for yourself, but basically that's what's happening. And it shifts because the electron is the electrical body within the atom that is the effect of electricity within our body. In that shift, in that change, it changes our physical structure so that we are actually vibrating faster. Our frequency is higher. Our wavelength is faster. And that's how we become more aligned with and attuned to the light body that we are.
Now, isn't it interesting that our religious leaders today consider themselves the representatives of God? In other words, they're the gatekeepers for us to get to God.
Right.
At least
exactly.
Now. And so you wonder, are the TV evangelists actually taking monatomic gold? Of course, I'm being a smart aleck again.
Well,
Some of them look like they're taking an awful lot of it, actually.
Well, I've always thought it was really interesting, especially since I was raised a Catholic, and I really kind of delved into the research of, okay, being raised in the Catholic schools, you get brainwashed. You know, you don't read the same history books that the other kids do. You don't get taught the same thing about anything that the other schools teach, because everything is slanted towards what the Catholic Church did with it. So after you, you know, surface from this little deluge and you begin to look at how history is actually portrayed by other people, is that our cue that we're going to go away?
No, I heard a noise, but I don't know where that came from. That was
It was music. It was heavenly music.
I heard something. It sounded almost like a harp or...
Yeah, it was like a harp.
Or a piano chord or something. You know, like, sort of like a plucking sound.
Yeah, interesting.
You heard that too. Hmm.
I did too, yeah. I thought we were being told, like, you know, 1 minute time up.
Oh, no, maybe the NSA is now informing us when they're there with music.
Oh, that would be lovely. Okay. This would be lovely. Now I was going to have to remember what I was saying. Oh, the Catholic Church, right. So I thought I find it kind of amusing, and some people would be horrified, but I just kind of laughed, when I look at how, because the Catholic Church is the Christian church that other Christian churches, you know, kind of broke off from, so I'm using it as a hub here for a minute, how they took all of the festivals, they took all the pagan festivals, they took all of the celebrations that already were in existence, and then they took all of the things they wanted the Catholics to believe, and they tied them to pagan festivals, so that when the pagans or the non-Christians were having their little celebrations, then they could have a celebration within the church and they could call it something else. So if you take that mindset and you kind of go back, knowing what you know of Zachariah's work, you realize that they're piggybacking themselves on these priest kings and saying, we're the intermediaries between man and God now, and you have to come to us because you can't get to God by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And using the regular communion ceremony, etc., to kind of spur this on with people and to keep them tied to the church. And how many people, first of all, how many Catholics there are, and secondly, how many people that are Catholics truly believe that all of this is actually, quote-unquote, the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of just stand back and shake my head.
Yeah, for a lot of people now, you know, this information is going to conflict with their religious beliefs.
Yes.
In that it implies in the back of their mind that Christ didn't exist, or
mm-hmm.
or Buddha didn't exist, or
mm-hmm.
All of these spiritual beings that came here to uplift mankind's consciousness
mm-hmm.
and bring truth, that somehow we're implying that they didn't exhort us to start a religion to follow them. And
well,
yes, I know. That's always been my pet peeve about organized religion, is that these you could call them saints, avatars, whatever
uh-huh.
you want to call them, they were not intending to have people worship them. They were pointing the way to God, to higher consciousness,
right.
and right living. And of course, you always have those that want to profit from a new idea. They want
yes.
to be the one to control it and make money with it.
Right, exactly. And taking people like Jesus and Buddha, they were rebels. They
yes.
were fighting against the tide.
Yes.
And, you know, Jesus, that's one of the reasons he was crucified. He kept doing everything to make everybody mad. And it wasn't like he was doing it unwittingly. And he wasn't certainly set out to make people angry, but he knew he was going to, because he was doing the things that the people needed him to do and say to shake them up, to make them look, and to hear his words. And that made the establishment mad.
Yeah. And he even knew the outcome of his mission.
Of course he did. Of course he did. And Buddha said to Dad, with all of his money, thanks a lot, Dad, I'm not going to do it. I took a look at it. Don't like that kind of a life. I'm going to go and sit underneath my tree and find out what I am. And, you know, people could say, well, yeah, oh, you did. Well, yes, you just have to go back and look at the caste system and the hierarchy and the civilization that he was living in at the time and realize what a huge step that was.
Yes.
His family were not happy. And
yes.
to do the things that we really want to do, we need to take our belief systems and examine every single one of them and find out where they came from, to find out if that is our truth or not. Or is it something that we're simply doing because we think that it's going to keep us safe, secure, liked by our friends and family, all of the little, you know, end result benefits of doing whatever our conditioned beliefs tell us to do. And when we really look at them, we find out they all came from somebody else who either wants to be right or wants to control. When
yes.
you have a truth that is your own truth, that is really your own truth, it supports you, and it brings you peace and happiness. And then you know that you're in your own truth, rather than having to do something out of fear because you're afraid, if I don't do this or I don't believe this, something bad's going to happen to me.
Yeah, and the key word in that phrase you just used was the word no.
No.
Because the belief is based upon an assumption,
yes.
and it can be based upon an illusion.
Exactly, exactly.
Which is not a truth, and it's not knowledge.
I looked up the word believing the other day, because belief says you believe something. Okay, so go look up believe. And to believe something means that you have confidence in it without the need to have any proof that you are right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right there you just stopped me just dead in my tracks, because why would I want to have confidence in something if I don't know if it's right or not?
Mm-hmm.
Now, right, again, is relative for each person. That's what I mean. It's your own truth. But if somebody just says, well, you have to have faith, stop. No, you don't.
Yeah, or another way to describe belief, and this is not, I'm not challenging your definition, because
uh-huh.
I agree with it, but it would be the presumption or the assumption that something is so because we have been told it is.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
And again, you know, without proof.
Exactly.
And despite any proof that comes forward that contradicts it, people still
yeah.
hold on to the belief.
I know. Right. That's just, it's the brainwashing that we have been experiencing, and it's all based on fear. And we see it in our government right now in a big way. We see how people are being intimidated into being afraid of something that doesn't really have the authority that it looks like it does.
Mm-hmm.
We just experienced this, and we're experiencing it right now. Because we live on an island, and we have to take a ferry boat to get over to the mainland, and there's four islands that are served by the Washington State Ferry System in the San Juan Islands.
Mm-hmm.
We live on a very small one. Like I said, there's 1,500 people here. So when we get on a ferry boat, and if it's what's called a Lopez-only boat, which means it's only going to pick up people here and then it's going to go over to the mainland, there's not a lot of people on the boat. I mean, if you've got 100 cars, that's a lot. And we went over to the mainland the other day, and when we got off, in the lane of traffic that would take you through customs, because also there's once a day in the summer, there's a boat that goes from Canada to the mainland, so they have a
mm-hmm.
customs lane. All the lanes were blocked off except the custom lane. That's the only way you could get out. And the custom sign was taken down, and instead it says, stop for Border Patrol checkpoint.
Hmm.
And we had to stop our car, and we were asked if we were American citizens or not. And we said yes. And they looked in our car, and they let us go through.
Hmm.
Now,
what country did they think you would have been from?
They're looking for illegal Mexican workers.
Oh, and they're I'm sure that you have thousands of them on Lopez Island.
We have some. We have some. There's not thousands, but there are some.
I'm being a bit sarcastic.
Yeah, you know, well, the thing is that they're all afraid, so they're not going to get on the boat whether they are American citizens or not. Because if they're American citizens, they're going to get hassled just as much as if they're not American citizens, and they have to sit and prove that they're American citizens before they can even leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this is it's a fear mentality that is allowing this to happen. I mean, this is just a tiny little, you know, snippet of what's happening throughout the whole United States.
Yes, I agree. And we talk about those regularly on the show. So even in a spiritual context, it's going on, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Very much so. And that's why it's so important for people to question what they say they believe in, what they're actually, the belief they're acting from.
Mm-hmm.
Because
well, in our waiting moments here, Tony, first of all, I want to thank you for coming on the show again, and I know you're going to be back because we're starting to get at the heart of some issues here. And I know that you have many solutions to present to people to aid them in this quest that you have to lead people to a higher consciousness and ultimately self-empowerment and self-knowledge.
Yes.
And all the benefits that will come about because of that. And I want to give you the opportunity to exercise that mission here on Evident Footprints, as well as just sharing this with folks, and they can come to know it. Of course, they can get your book. They can visit your website. They can communicate with you and you know, get a reading or, you know, get some counseling, straighten out certain aspects of their life. And I don't know if you have a closing statement that you would like to make tonight that would be appropriate for what's going on right now and what can help people to get them on that path.
Yes, I would like to ask everyone to do just what I said before we knew we had to close, and that is to question what you believe, why you believe it, and what benefit you or someone else is getting from it that is keeping you from your truth. And if you want to have some help free with that, if you would go onto my website, which is sacredspaceswa.com or angelichuman.com, and join my email list, then you will be receiving in the next month and a half weekly connections to videos I'm doing on this subject on YouTube. I did the first one this last week, and I'm reiterating part of it and doing much more this coming week, and I'm going to continue to with tools to assist you in evaluating what you believe so that you can find out if the beliefs you're holding are actually your own or if they come from someone else and they are no longer serving you and therefore not no longer serving the whole as well. So the two websites are Sacred Spaces, that's plural, WA.com, and angelichuman.com. And either one of those places has a join my email list, and then you'll be on the list to receive all of these video connections within the next, coming up in the next 6 weeks. There's going to be one a week.
Very good. What came through to me while you were giving that message is, and I was paying attention to what you were saying, is that you are opening doors to help people recognize how to, first of all, perceive or discern what their personal responsibility is in this life, and ultimately what their ultimate responsibility is in the oneness that we all share.
Yes, true.
I find it hard to imagine that we came here to watch this earth be destroyed.
No, I don't believe that is true.
And it would be a totally meaningless existence.
Yeah.
And they would have us believe that that was the only option that we
yeah.
have, and it is not the only option.
No, it's not.
In fact, that option is an illusion.
Yes, it is. It's all part of the illusion.
So,
and it's all based on fear.
So I got another $64,000 question right. I'm proud of myself.
Yay, Don. You came through again.
Well, Tony, we're out of time. I want to thank you. And
you
know, you'll have an invitation back soon because I do want to continue this discussion. And maybe we can talk about Planet X a little bit, too.
Yes, we can.
The next time.
Great.
So thank you, and I wish you well. And we'll be posting some stuff on the website. I'll be waiting for the Loch Ness Monster photo.
Yeah. I hope I get it soon. I'm sure she'll send it soon.
Okay,
good.
Very good.
Okay.
Well,
thank
it's
you,
been
Don.
A pleasure.
You too.
And folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Our special guest tonight was Tony Elizabeth Sarah Petrinovich, Ph.D. And you can contact her, as she said, via her website, sacredspaceswa.com or angelichuman.com. And I recommend also checking out her book, The Call. It's posted on my website, directlightproductions.com, on the books page. And there's a link there to take you right to her website. And you can get a copy of that book for yourself, as well as read many interesting things that she has posted on her site. In the meantime, I want to wish everyone a very peaceful night, lots of peace, love, and light. Join us tomorrow. I will be again broadcasting the TNT News Hour at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, as well as being with my special guest from educate-yourself.org, Mr. Ken Adachi. You don't want to miss tomorrow night's show. In the meantime, have a very good night.